Welcome to the Overcoming Financial Trauma Podcast. It's time to remove guilt, shame, and fear from conversation around your money, mindset, and mission. Let's normalize these conversations. Here's your host, financial coach and consultant, Rakim Sabri.
What's going on, guys? Rakim Sabri here. And if you enjoy this podcast, you'll love my weekly newsletter. Overcoming Financial Trauma is a weekly newsletter that comes out Friday mornings at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I discuss all things financial trauma. Subscribe at rakimsabri.substack.com. That's rakimsabre.substack.com. There are three subscription tiers. One is free, one is paid, and one is a founding member. If you go on over to the website, you can see the benefits associated with each tier. But if you decide to subscribe for free, that's okay too. Again, that's rakimsabri.substack.com. And I'll see you guys in the comments. All right, welcome to another episode of Overcoming Financial Trauma. I'm your host, Rakim Sabri, and I have another very special guest. So Jason and I met at FinCon in 2022. But we originally met through Twitter. I was I had a GoFundMe running to crowdfund to attend the Financial Therapy Association conference, and a mutual connection retweeted the GoFundMe, and Jason like immediately was just like, if this person believes in you, I believe in you, and donated to it without even knowing who I was. So we met at FinCon in person finally a couple months later. And it's just been vibes ever since. Jason has given me like the lowdown on so many different things, being a speaker. He's done a TEDx. He's an author. And I just love his message. So before I just steal all the show talking about you, Jason, why don't you welcome and why don't you introduce yourself and kind of just talk about your background?
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here. And it's interesting, right? Because we connected on Twitter. I mean, Twitter can be a great place to connect with like-minded folks. And it's because through a mutual friend, a connection, Harlan, through the Plutus Foundation. And I said, if Harlan believes in you, I believe in you. I don't even have to question it. And he was right on the money. I mean, I researched you before I gave to the fund, because I wanted to see what you were about, and just hearing your story, hearing your purpose and your mission, Rakim, like, it's amazing. And what you have accomplished in a very short period of time just really impressed me. And then when I met you in person and feeling your energy in person, I'm like, this guy is going to go somewhere. I mean, like, you are somewhere, but I'm telling you, I just see it. And I haven't been wrong. I mean, some of the biggest names in wellness and personal finance, the names that people know are people that I started this journey with, and we've helped each other. We've collaborated. And there's always just something about people that I feel, and it's like the gut instinct kind of thing. And so I think that's a really good segue, right? Feelings and emotions, because that's what people know me for when it comes to personal finance. I'm the guy who talks about financial wellness. I'm the person who talks about health and wealth and the quality of the life that we live. And so I'm never just about the budget. I'm never just about pinching pennies and investing to reach financial milestones. I certainly do talk about that, but I want to go to the nuts and bolts of what makes us us, and or what prevents us from reaching our goals. And like what you said, it can stem from some traumas in the past related to money and other things around it. And so I like to share with everyone that now, because I no longer have shame, I no longer have guilt or embarrassment, that I was a high functioning financial mess. I mean, you could see I was doing it. I was killing it. I was getting the degrees, my MBA. I was getting certifications. I was climbing up the corporate ladder, became a VP of marketing after being a teller just in 3.5 years. And with that said, I never truly learned how to manage money. In my household, we don't talk about money. First gen, my parents just wanted to make sure that everything was taken care of and we didn't have to worry about food and shelter, but we didn't have the good things in terms of like the fancy vacations or the luxury goods or the brand name food that people you would see or my friends at school would have. And so that did impact me in a way on how I viewed money. But I'm an optimist, I think, just innately. And I did everything I could. I studied really hard. I worked myself to the bone to achieve financial success. And my story with money really started when my parents sat me down at the age of 17 and said, "We can't afford to send you to college." And I was like, "What? Why not?" So I had three other siblings in college at the time, and we didn't know the resources that was available. And my parents made enough to pretty much disqualify me for any type of financial aid, but they didn't have the additional money to afford it. So I found myself working at Newark Airport, cleaning toilets, serving drinks, trying to save up as much money as possible. And I think, like all of us, right, when we work really hard for that paycheck, we want to show something with it. And did I show how I was living large with my paycheck? And it just brought me to a lot of financial issues and a lot of debt, credit card debt. And that debt and that bad relationship with money led to a lot of stress, made me unable to really pursue my dreams outside of kind of the professional success. And what I'd like to dive in, and I think this would be a good way for us to connect, because I thought the answer to all my problems was just to make more money. And the more money I made, the more I realized something else was wrong. And I didn't know what that was. And I was afraid to confront it. So when I was no longer thinking about how do I afford my bills or pay for my debt or put food on the table, when you're laying in bed staring at the ceiling, all these thoughts would just start coming through our minds. And certainly there are many nights, sleepless nights, thinking about something is missing, something is wrong. And so that all culminated to me at one point in my life, when I was trying to climb up the corporate ladder and being selected as the successor CEO for my company, to quit instead. And instead of having that fancy title, more money, more prestige, I wanted a different path. I wanted to do something else, but I necessarily didn't know what that was. And realizing through this journey of kind of self-discovery and self-love that my financial trauma was related to the fact that, yes, we didn't have a lot of money growing up, but there were other aspects of my childhood, of the environment I grew up in, that, for lack of a better word, traumatized me. And I was the type who never used that word. And I've learned I have to recognize the environment I grew up in. I have to recognize the financial issues I grew up in, the mental and emotional traumas that I've experienced growing up. And so for me, getting my finances right was the first step to understanding the work that still needed to be done to get my mind right, to get me emotionally well, to get me physically healthy, to help me start going on the path of spiritual development. I know I said a lot there, and it's just, I'm so passionate about this topic.
No, I think, first of all, the time is yours. You can say as much as you want, but the value is there too, right? You talked about, I mean, you ended on a very powerful note when you talk about the spiritual journey. And I don't see money and spirituality often talked about in the same space, right? I did it and I thought it was like a really controversial approach when I wrote Financially Irresponsible. Stephen Hughes does it when he talks about money therapy and integrating like the Reiki healing practices with the financial education, and you do it. And I think it's the thing, or it's one of many things that kind of weaves us into each other, because there is the niche genre of financial psychology that can be further niched down into financial therapy. And where we're looking for a clinical approach, right, out of a textbook, to understanding how people interact with money or how people feel about money, there's something to be said about the intangibles around, I don't even know what to call it, but our spiritual side when it comes to money, the vibrations of money. There we go. Yes. The vibrations of what our wellness is and how that manifests financially. I've talked about money as a symbol more times than I could remember, right? And that it's not, you know, people go crazy for like this physical thing and the hoarding of, you know, these digits in their bank accounts or, you know, physical commodities, whether they be gold or silver. And we don't acknowledge like the spiritual signature of money, like, and how that represents in our life and how that can bring out the best in us or how that could bring out the worst in us. So yes, you said a lot. I'm like super amped up because we touched on spirituality side of it.
I love this. I could talk about the spirituality side of financial wellness like all day. And I love the fact that you hone in on that because I am with you when it comes to the intangible qualities of money. And I understand why money has this spiritual context. It's because most of us, the majority of us, exchange our time in one way or another for money. And so money is a representation of who we are because who we are is really just the time in this space, in this world, in this universe. And so if we're spending our time at a job we hate to earn a paycheck that just barely covers the minimum to live, there is a lot of attachment or a forced detachment on this concept of money. And so for me, I used to not think of money in a spiritual sense. And then I realized, I'm like, well, yeah, if time is exchanged for money and my time is my essence, my spirit, my soul, however you want to define it. Well, yes, I understand why there is a relation, a correlation to money. And I think it's essential and vital. And so you mentioned like my second book that's coming out. What's interesting is that I share stories of people who have it all. They have mental clarity, emotional health, physically well. They have the occupational success, right? The professional success. They live in beautiful homes, the environmental well-being. And then they say something's missing. There's a void in their life and they can't put their finger on it. And that void is really the lack of spiritual development, the lack of spiritual growth. And what tends to happen when you're in this space and you don't realize that spiritual component that's missing, you then focus all your effort back into the area you think can fill that void, which is the workplace, which is you're constantly working. And then you're thinking, okay, well, I'm doing well at work. And we're doing well at work means I am going to start earning more money. And so, yes, you improve your occupational health, you improve your financial health, but then you're not addressing the spiritual health aspect of who you are. And then all of a sudden, you get into a mode where nothing matters because it's like, what does it matter if I achieve this? What does it matter if I made $1 million? And again, I think it's important for us to really look at things holistically and just to kind of wrap up my thoughts around here and get people to understand why we're having this conversation is that I wrote this second book of mine, Happy Money, Happy Life, a multidimensional approach to health, wealth, and financial freedom, to get people to understand the 8 dimensions of wellness, the 8 different parts of you that make you, you. And that is your mental, emotional, physical, spiritual, social, occupational, environmental, and financial health. And I wrote the book in a way to show you how money weaves itself into these dimensions, how money affects these dimensions, therefore affecting how you think and feel about yourself, and then giving you the tools and the resources to effectively buy happiness, improve your wellness by spending on things that truly matter. And so, for instance, for me, spiritual health, which is one of the dimensions, when people are thinking about, okay, how can I improve my spiritual health? You can think about it religiously, you can think about it spiritually, or you can think about it purposefully, which is what are you doing to give to others? And I'm a big believer that when we serve ourselves, some might call it selfish. And when we serve others, some might call it selfless. But I think when we get to a point where we take care of ourselves, we're then able to take care of others. We're less dependent on a system. And that's just a process of self-awareness. And that self-awareness leads to a very purposeful pursuit where we can help more people. And I'm a big believer when we help others, we get this spiritual fulfillment. And I see it in you. And I see that you want to constantly give to others. And part of that process is giving to yourself. And that to me is spiritual well-being. And that to me is still having the financial conversation, because, you know, sometimes it's hard to give to others when we don't have the financial means to give to ourselves. And that's just part, again, part of the process.
Yeah. I mean, spot on for a lot of those things. Before I get into me, I want to acknowledge something that you said too, because as you were talking, I was thinking of like this question, right? And the question was, well, what about the people that don't subscribe to any particular spirituality, right? Like I have friends who are atheists who they're just like, yeah, there's no God, like there is no spirituality. Like, okay, if you believe that, cool. And you answered that question, I guess, kind of intuitively, right? Where you talked about, you can look at it from a religious perspective, you can look at it from a spiritual perspective, or you can look at it from a purposeful perspective. And that, I mean, that's just super deep. Like, I think I just want to let that breathe for a second, because even if you don't subscribe to like the image of like a God or spirituality in the way that it's been popularized, or in the way that it's just existed for the time that we've been on this planet, right? Mm-hmm. There's still like a reason why you wake up every morning, right? There's still something that excites you, that gives you purpose every single day. And so I think you hitting that on the head is super dope. As it relates to me and you recognizing that in me, and I want to thank you for recognizing that in me. Spirituality has been a really big part of my existence, my whole life. Like my grandfather always talked about the three degrees. He talked about spiritual, mental, and physical, right? And so I live my life looking at things through those three lenses at the same time and making the connections between each one and saying, okay, like, what is the physical manifestation of this thing in the world? What is the mental manifestation of this thing in the world? What is the spiritual manifestation of this thing in the world? And usually you look at it in the reverse order, right? It starts spiritually and then it shows up mentally and then it shows up physically. So 100%, like that's crucial to like my existence. And again, I want to thank you for acknowledging that.
I tell you, I think I've been doing this work for so long and having these conversations, and people know me, my friends, my dear close friends and others, as you've gotten to know me, like I do love talking about all aspects of our well-being and just money just being a component of it. And because of that, when people say certain specific things, I feel it. And I recognize it immediately. And when you talk about the mental, physical, and the spiritual, I mean, we all know it from different words, right? The mind, body, and soul that many people have shared over and over. And for me, whichever words you choose to use, understand that things are connected. And what I've learned through the studies and the research that I've done with this book, because it isn't just a story about me. I poured myself into studies, psychological research, and on everything around happiness, everything around the dimensions of wellness, and realizing that when you conceptualize the eight dimensions of wellness, these are dimensions that are overlapping. They're interconnected. When you're looking at working on your mental health, well, that has an effect on your emotional well-being, on your physical well-being. If you're working on your physical health, that has an effect on your mental health. And so you probably hear a lot of people that go, oh yeah, I've been working out, I've been running, and mentally I'm getting clear, because it is all connected. And the same thing too, when we are mentally suffering, when we are emotionally in upheaval, it affects our physical condition. And one of the things I've been sharing with people is the fact that for a very long time, I have mastered the act or the art of mental gymnastics. And I think we all know what that is, right? We know something's not working. We know we want something to change. We know an environment isn't a place for us, but we're doing everything we can mentally to kind of, in one way, kind of gaslight ourselves. But we're doing all this exercise with our brain to say, it's going to be okay. The light is at the end of the tunnel. Oh, there's a rainbow ahead. There's a silver lining. And that's good. But it's also important to understand eventually mental gymnastics is going to show up and appear physically. It's going to manifest itself physically. And so there is a point that we get so mentally stressed that it starts appearing in our bodies. I mean, I started getting rashes on my chest. I started getting joint pains and I had bloodshot eyes and I developed vertigo because of the mental and emotional stress that I was feeling. And then coupled with the financial stress. And then again, too, I didn't even know where to begin. Like, you know, was it the financial stress that caused my mental distress? Was it the mental health issues that was causing my financial decision-making? And now I have physical issues that's costing money to go see the doctor. And then at this point, I'm questioning God and going, God, what's going on in my life? And so again, and I want people to understand it's all connected. And I think there's a point that we can focus on healing mentally, emotionally, and knowing that there are other parts and it's important for us to lean into our strengths. And so for me, understanding that my kind of like my spiritual development is a big part of who I am, I leaned into what I really call the spiritual unknown. And I grew up as a Roman Catholic. I grew up in a religious household, but I don't consider myself religious at all. And I wouldn't have considered myself spiritual at all. But eventually, how I continue to live my life, I've realized there is something more than I can fathom or I can even articulate. And right now, how I understand that something more is that we are all connected in one way or another. And that to me is enough to say how I treat myself, how I help myself can help others. And it boils down to the part of healing. And we talked about healing being an important message of yours. And for me, I think for a while I'm out there trying to help as many people as possible, and because it's purposeful. And then I realized in the last few years, I need to do a bit more work to heal internally and start unraveling some of the issues that led up to the financial situations, because I began repeating the same financial mistakes. And I was asking myself, like, how can I do the same mistakes over and over again with all the knowledge about money? There's something else there. So it's not just the math, it's the emotions. And then one key thing about emotions is that we are not our emotions. They're just a response to the situation and the environment. And the situation and the environment that I was in was stressful and caused me to be emotionally, in lack of a better word, unstable. And when we don't address the emotional responses to the situation, and we again do the mental gymnastics, well, that's what leads to mental distress, mental stress, mental health issues, which are all diagnosable. And so again, too, it's just an example how everything is connected. And ultimately, it's about leaning into to our strengths and utilizing that to strengthen the other areas that need help.
Fantastic. I don't know that I've shared this publicly. And if I have shared it publicly, I certainly haven't shared it on this podcast, but you said something that resonated with me when you talked about the rashes on your chest. How I landed in financial trauma as like my theme really came from corporate trauma as a previous theme, right? Like when I left my job and, you know, I said I fired my boss and there was this whole commotion about it. it gave me a boost in the media world because like everybody wanted to pick up that story and it was super viral. I mean, I tweeted the day that I literally minutes after I submitted my resignation that I just quit my job and it went viral. And you talk about vertigo, which was something that I experienced when I was on the job and I didn't know where it came from. Like I've been on roller coasters. I grew up loving roller coasters. I've been on boats. I've been on horses. I've been in cars. Like I love like the movement. And so the vertigo was a weird thing for me. I started getting like eczema, like patches on, or psoriasis, one of them. I didn't go get it necessarily checked, but I started getting like these itchy, dry, flaky patches. I got one on my chest, I got one on my hand, and I'm like, what is this? Like, what's happening to me? And this was leading up to ultimately when I made a decision to leave my job. And when I left my job, it all went away, like vanished. And I describe my departure from corporate America as being, I describe in the media anyway, my departure from corporate America as being to preserve my mental health. And I had battled with mental health in the past through depression, through anxiety, but in very private circles, like maybe one or two people, my dad specifically, I described my leaving corporate America as a spiritual sort of liberation, in that I received the answer and the support spiritually that this was the right decision for me to make. And no matter how difficult the journey would be, and it's been a challenging journey financially, pursuing entrepreneurship full time and, you know, the ups and downs of what income looks like, I still have so much more peace of mind, of spirit, and even in my body than I did when I was working and I was making all the money that I was making. And so you sharing that part of your story really prompted me to share that part of mine. In that, yes, everything is connected. And there was definitely dotted line connections between my spiritual health and the acknowledgement of my purpose spiritually and my mental health and my physical health, which had started to manifest in a negative way because I was going against my own nature existing in that space. And I'm not saying that to say that all of corporate America is bad and, you know, jobs are bad and we shouldn't work, right? Because we need to work. We need to make money. But I'm saying it to say that the specific leadership that I had within the specific company that I worked for had created an environment that was turning me toxic. And I needed to remove myself from that immediately. And so hearing your story validates that experience with vocabulary that maybe I wouldn't have thought previously to use. And I just, there's this word, ashe, it speaks to like spiritual power and acknowledgement. And I just like, I want to ashe you for sharing that and bringing that up because it's so true, true.
Well, thank you so much. I'm getting goosebumps. So as you're listening to this, I'm getting goosebumps as you were telling your story. And I know so many more people are experiencing what we both experience and don't understand why rashes are appearing or feeling lethargic or getting headaches and dizziness or, you know, vertigo, which is something more than the room spinning. It's like the world has turned upside down and it's what I would like to call it Picasso painting. And I just couldn't make sense of it. And that was a key thing. And so when you started sharing your story and I'm applying it to this eight dimensions, you've realized that there's a strength on your spiritual side that you were able to lean to. You were able to understand that something was off that was beginning to affect you mentally and now manifesting itself physically. So you leaned into your spiritual strength that allowed you to kind of overcome the mental limitations because of the environment that you were in. And there are two aspects here, right? So environmental well-being and occupational well-being. Environmental well-being is what I call happy space. Occupational well-being is what I call happy work. So the workplace that you mentioned, well, that's not a happy space. And what's happening is that that environment in itself will cause mental distress. And if the leadership or coworkers, and there's a tweet by Tabitha Brown, which I really loved. It was about your coworkers doesn't have to be your friends, because there are coworkers who are toxic, and that toxicity causes the environmental changes that then your kind of emotional side responds to. Now your emotions are going to tell you if this is pleasurable or this is stressful. It became a stressful environment. And you knowing that, okay, well, this is also the source of my income. Well, that's after doing that mental gymnastics, should I stay? Should I go? Boom, you got it. And then by you making the decision to leave the toxic environment that was causing these issues has allowed your body to begin to heal. And what I think, and you pointed it out, it's like, I don't believe all corporate businesses or organizations are toxic. There are many that are run pretty well. Not everyone who is employed needs to be their own boss. And I certainly met a lot of people because it's a lot of work. But the one key thing I want people to understand, part of what makes us is occupational well-being. That is happy work. Doing work that's aligned with us. And sometimes that might just be an accountant at a corporate job. And because you love numbers and you love the stability of a paycheck every biweekly. And sometimes that might be, you know, for lack of a better word, people like us who like the inconsistency of money flowing into our life. And I'm laughing with nervous laughter because I'm telling everyone, it seems glamorous, but it is a lot of work. It's much more work, and you learn a great deal about yourself. But the one piece we have in head on is that when you set up on this journey, you start improving your social health. That is another aspect of your well-being, and us being connected, us being colleagues and friends, I am part of your social health. The ability for you to lean in when you need answers to specific questions about your business or your progress or your process. And I think for me, in my darkest of days, the wealth I had was that of my friends and family. That was an eye-opener for me. And I think for many of us in the quarantine, many of us in the pandemic have realized the importance of our social network being our social wealth. And so with that said, I think we've covered all the eight bases or the eight dimensions of wellness, and just through your stories and through these conversations. And again, it's something that I've wanted to talk about for so long, and meeting more and more like-minded people who are able to share their stories have given me the strength to share mine.
And, you know, I'm grateful that you are talking about it, because again, you know, there's, I'm looking at the spectrum, right, of the financial space. And there are the people who are the hardcore financial literacy people, right? It's just A plus B equals C. You need to learn how to budget, you need to learn how to save, and you need to learn how to build credit. And it's very broad. And then there's the more niche financial psychology space, going down into financial therapy. And then there's the even more niche, virtually non-existent, but you're like that light in the darkness that speaks to total wellness that includes the spiritual side of things. And I think that it takes great courage to talk about these topics in a public forum, because we don't know how people are going to receive them, right? Like, they might hear, oh, you know, they're talking about that stuff, the woo-woo stuff, right? That's how I've heard it referred to, the woo-woo stuff. And they might be turned off, because one of the things that I've learned on this journey, particularly from the spiritual perspective and definitely from the entrepreneurial perspective, is that a lot of this work, although it benefits other people, benefits us, because we have to hold up this mirror to ourselves and really kind of look at the imperfections and the grooves and the crevices and the ridges that exist in our total bodies. And so, you know, when we talk about financial trauma, we talk about financial stress and financial anxiety. Yes, I can talk about all of those things from a clinical perspective. I can talk about all of those things from a, you know, textbook financial literacy perspective, but I can talk about all of those things from a lived experience perspective. And I could say, like, I know what the weathering of that emotional roller coaster is, or the mental gymnastics that is involved in figuring out what does day-to-day look like financially? What is the give and take going to be, or the sacrifices that I'm going to make in order to walk in my purpose? And not everybody's ready for that. Not everybody is courageous enough to do that right now. I believe everybody has the potential to, but not everybody is courageous enough to do that right now. And we are signaled through social media, traditional media, and every other form of, you know, media that's out there to do the exact opposite. We're signaled to consume, to conform, to just status quo, right? And so when we create these going against the grain pieces of content, and we talk about these taboo topics like money and feelings, who would have thought, or money and spirituality, or, you know, touching on these eight dimensions of wellness, as you mentioned, our audiences may not necessarily be ready to receive that in the moment that we're delivering it. And so in a way, it's kind of a revolutionary act, right? To put it out there and wait and see who bites, and, you know, maybe who needs to take a bite and come back to it later. And then, you know, time will tell when it actually settles and what fruit that bears through people who have taken the work that people like you, people like me, people like, you know, anybody who's in this space doing this work does, and really applying it to see like the other side of what we're talking about, and that we're not just doing this to create a hustle, right? We're not just doing this to take advantage of people. We're not just doing this because it's a trend. We're doing this because we care. We're doing this because we're invested, and we're doing this because this is our existence. It's a reflection of who we are. So I really appreciate you, first of all, taking the time to share, but also doing the work, even if you didn't share on my platform, because it's super needed.
Yeah, well, thank you so much. I mean, I think for me, I've been in this game for far longer, over a decade. And when I started talking about financial wellness, everyone looked at me like I had 10 heads. Financial wellness, a guy talking about thoughts and feelings when it comes to money, like what's wrong with me? And I actually had a very difficult time connecting with media because they looked at me and said, oh, you want to talk about investing? You want to talk about money? Sure. But you can't even talk about household finance. You can't talk about frugality. You can't talk about mental health. And so that was my experience. And so when you mentioned, and there are people that weren't ready, and then society by and large and media and what have you, they kind of gear us towards a certain way. I have felt that. And because I felt that and I went through it, it did impact me psychologically. And it did make me question if I was doing the right type of work. But every single time I meet people of across genders and identities and races and ethnicities, they tell me, it's like, thank you for sharing the story, because I may not have been ready 2 years ago, but you planted the seed. And I think for us and the work that we're doing, we just need to plant the seed, and people just need to show up to be watered. And so it's like, I've learned to, part of my healing process and the work that I do, so I don't get overwhelmed and I don't feel stressed, is that I will continue to put out the work that I believe can help others, but I am not responsible for the result of the work on people's lives. Because what I want them is to understand that they have more control over the actions than what society in general tells them that they do not. And I think once we do, we realize we then can effectively start working on those aspects of the dimensions of wellness. And then you don't feel like, in your situation, you don't feel like you're trapped at a job that's literally killing you. And so that's the control piece of it. And for me to connect, to be able to share bits and pieces of my story, to be able to talk to people about happy money, happy life, the book and the dimensions of wellness, it lifts my spirit. It makes me excited because I see that there's still a lot more work to be done, but we have come a long way.
Jason, tell the audience where they can find you, where they can find your book, and anything else that you want to plug in this time.
Well, I want to thank everyone for your time and space. I want to thank you, Akeem, for like giving me this opportunity to talk with your audience that you've cultivated and that have grown to respect you. And so I do want to honor you with that. The other piece is that you can connect with me on Instagram and Twitter. Those are the two places that I am most active. You can certainly find me on Facebook as well. I'm active on there, but it's primarily my close friends and family. But if you want to become a close friend of mine, you could definitely connect with me on Facebook. And you will have a variety of posts if you connect me on social media. So I just don't talk about money. I do talk about health and wealth and everything in between. And I do encourage everyone to go pick up the copy of my second book, Happy Money, Happy Life, A Multidimensional Approach to Health, Wealth, and Financial Well-Being, to understand that money isn't everything, but money impacts most things. And to find the resources and the tools and the network to allow you to start building and creating the life of your dreams by ensuring that you work on all aspects of your well-being. And the book is available everywhere that you buy your books. And so I do recommend supporting your local bookstore, local retailers, but it's also available on Amazon if that's more convenient for you. And I will be on the road on a 50-state tour. And so you connect with me on social, you'll get updated on where to meet me in person, where we can connect, we can exchange ideas, and hopefully form a conversation around this topic and potentially collaborate in the future.
Fantastic. Jason, I really appreciate your time. Like I said, you're doing great work, valuable work, and I look forward to what's in store for you for 2023.
Thank you so much.